26. Denisovan Embassy. Lev Zubov, who'd first introduced Netherton to Lobeer, curated a list of establishments in London which had been wholly repurposed since originally being named. Hence, the Denisovan Embassy, assembler excavated beneath most of one entire side of Hanway Street. This was a linear sequence of low-ceilinged rooms, none very large, dressed to somewhat resemble a cave system. Having been built as a themed nightclub, evoking the wholly imaginary erotic appeal of various species of early hominid, it now functioned, original name and decor intact, as a subterranean 24-hour breakfast bar. To Netherton, it was simply a place that did rather good breakfasts, its club days evident in artificially irregular walls and ceilings of a geologically incorrect sandstone, cartoonishly daubed with phallic and vulvar pictoglyphs. What furniture there was less convincing still, assembled pseudo-geologically from whatever the rest of the place consisted of. All of it, however, now mercifully minus any active assembler swarms, hence immobile and unchanging. Seated here, none too comfortably on a truncated stalagmite, he could at least be glad the place made a decent flat white. The pert young woman who'd brought it hadn't looked particularly Denisovan, in spite of rumors that former staff could still be found here, some having chosen not to reverse certain risque modifications required in their previous employment. He seemed the only customer at the moment, something he put down to low beer being expected momentarily. Now Ash entered, her outfit approximating a Victorian lady's riding habit, but reimagined as having been cut from nylon aviator jackets and equipped with a demi-bustle that resembled part of a miniature dirigible. She carried a top hat, his least favorite sort of headgear, held just to the side of her multiply zippered black sateen bosom in what he supposed had once been exactly the correct manner. "Congratulations," she said, placing the hat on the faux sandstone table slab.
"For?"
"She's chuffed. Pleased as I've seen her."
"She's here?"
"Outside."
Seating herself on the nearest stalagmite stump, the demi-bustle discreetly adjusting itself.
"I was just on the phone with your man in the county. You seem, by consulting him, to have triggered a game change."
"Delighted to hear it,"
said Netherton, wishing he'd been able to tell Lobeer himself. Instead, he'd had Ash ringing him up after his visit with Madison to arrange this meeting, the virtual impossibility of surprising Lobeer being perhaps the most unsettling thing about her.
"You'll be going there now," Ash said, as the same girl arrived to take her order.
"I beg your pardon," he asked Ash.
"Honey and lemon," Ash told the girl who hadn't yet spoken, "scarcely more than tepid."
"Very good," said the girl, turning to go.
"Going where?" he asked.
"This puzzle piece you've helped her find has upped connectivity with Vespasian's stub."
"Eunice's stub," corrected Lobeer, abruptly appearing, upswept white hair backlit by the dim carmine glow of a Denisovan sex crevasse.
"Do they have a wheelie boy?"
Netherton asked.
"May I bring you something?"
the girl asked Lobeer.
"Perrier, please," said Lobeer, removing her tweed shooting cape.
Folding it, she took a seat on the bench-like ledge behind the slab of table.
"Are you familiar with Boston Dynamics?" she asked.
"No,"
said Netherton.
"Neither was I," Lobeer said. "Ash has become quite the boffin."
"I'd prefer a wheelie, if it's all the same,"
he said.
"We're providing you something with considerably more functionality," said Ash. "Here's the controller you'll use."
Netherton grimaced, seeing a patch of tabletop come uneasily to life, the sight of assemblers too nakedly at work abruptly nauseating him. Invisibly small, swarming in their billions, manipulating matter at a molecular level, they called into question the validity of every distinct category of thing. Chalk might be cheese, or cheese chalk, where assemblers were concerned. That they animated Ash's demi-bustle, or her former tattoos, or for that matter Thomas's nanny, was tolerable, but one never wanted to see them at it, overt chaos, the eye reading it as some grave and sudden defect of vision.
"Neural cutout,"
Ash said, but don't expect as much in the way of feedback as you would from a Perry.
A locus of clonic indeterminacy, no wider than a dinner plate and of no particular shade, in which the eye sought focus, but found none.
I don't like using Perrys, Netherton said.
An object was emerging now, bulbously curvilinear, dully metallic. And then was complete, atop now blessedly inert faux Denisovan sandstone. His nausea receded.
The girl returned with Ash's honey and lemon and Lobeer's Perrier on a tray.
Ash will familiarize you with the anthropomorphic drone you'll be using there, Lobeer said when the girl had gone. You'll demo a sim.
Netherton eyed the newborn controller, apparently of bead-blasted aluminum, which he knew would fit him all too perfectly.
A wheelie boy, Lobeer continued, would be of limited utility. Slow, no manipulative capacity, and entirely unable to pose a threat.
I'm not in the business of posing threats.
You'll have a pilot for that, no fear.
A pilot?
Someone from the county, accustomed to operating this sort of thing. Do you remember Connor Penske?
Flynn's brother's friend from their days in the Marines, severely disabled by a war injury. He'd since been re-abled, to whatever extent his stub was able to emulate 22nd century prosthetics. Emotionally unstable when Netherton had first met him, dangerously volatile, he was now less so, at least according to Flynn, who was fond of him. Who had, he now remembered, briefly partnered with Clovis's stub self, though the relationship hadn't lasted.
Isn't he in Washington with Leon?
Netherton asked.
He's wherever Leon is, said Ash. He watches out for him, keeps him company.
After some personnel adjustment, Lobeer said, we are now satisfied with their secret service. We kept Connor in the White House initially to keep an eye on them, in the meantime discovering the positive effect he has on Leon.
So I'll operate it here, and Connor will as well, but from there, Washington?
Connor will in effect be your chauffeur, said Lobeer. But it looks as though you'll initially have to operate it yourself. Connor's temporarily unavailable.
Are the aunties able to sort causation there yet?
Netherton asked.
No, Lobeer said. But given where we assume Eunice to be headed, developmentally, that may not even be necessary.
She sipped her Perrier. When she returned it to the table, she had to move it twice before she found a level spot.
Why not?
He asked.
She's becoming her own aunties, Ash said.
But they're predicting nuclear war there. Yours, I mean.
Making odds on it, yes, Lobeer said, rising from the bench. She bent to pick up her cape, then straightened, shaking it out.
You'll have your first lesson now, she said, refurling herself in tweed.
When will I be going?
We don't yet know, Lobeer said. Thank you again for thinking of Madison. You've made possible a very timely breakthrough.
You're welcome.
They watched her go.
Now for an influx of hungry customers, Ash said, picking up Netherton's controller. She stood. This way, for privacy's sake.
Netherton followed her into areas less well lit.
Shouldn't this be far enough?
He asked eventually, thinking they might be under Hanway Place by now.
Quite, Ash said,
and gestured to dimly illuminate a ghostly rectilinear volume of space before and slightly above them. Within it, facing them, executed as a simple line drawing on a transparently gridded vertical plane, something only approximately humanoid attempted the spread-eagled pose of Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. It was headless, above inhumanly broad, rounded shoulders with disproportionately long arms and short legs.
No head?
He asked. None required, Ash said. Cameras round its shoulders, front and back. A sort of turret can be mounted where a head would be.
Why would it?
As a weapons platform, she said, seating herself on the edge of a sandstone divan. Recon, close combat, medevac, sit here, indicating a ledge behind her.
He did. What little illumination there was, aside from the display, was that same libidinal red, always indirect.
Gorilla on rollerblades, she said.
What are rollerblades?
Its feet are wheeled, she said. Electrically powered, extremely fast on the right sort of surface.
Netherton considered the thing's mesomorphic taper down from superhero shoulders to a corseted-looking waist. The relative lengths of its arms and legs did suggest the simian.
Legs are short.
Quite complex, though. Knees hinge in either direction.
The transparent plane on which the thing was drawn rotated vertically to display it in profile. It bent its knees conventionally, then straightened them, torso and hips remaining upright. Then bent them again, but this time backward.
Like a bird,
Netherton said.
Digitigrade, Ash corrected, apparently. Two entirely different sets of gate options depending on terrain, speed required, and whether or not you're wheeling it. And there, wheeling, you've a choice of powered, skating, or both.
It doesn't have hands.
Oh, thing's a Swiss Army knife, Ash said, puzzling him. All sorts of handy bits folded into either arm for ready access.
Now it raised the arm nearest them and unfolded approximately two fingers and a thumb.
It can use any firearm it might acquire, has its own laser targeting system, effectively doesn't miss.
And someone can print this for you in 2017?
It's done, she said, lowering the arm. They were well into building it for themselves when we found them. We could provide them with specifications they hadn't been able to find, plus a few of our own.
She passed him the controller, which he saw was dotted with regular lines of very small black holes.
Now, put this on, please.